This is First Up. Every morning, come and hang on First Up. The only show that brings the bang. It's First Up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
Oh, baby, we are back and better than ever. Welcome into First Up for this Monday morning, December the 6th. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakova with you after one of the wildest Sundays in sports you will ever see. How you doing, buddy? How was the weekend, and how was your experience for, 14 straight hours? Just soaking in the greatness that is watching sports yesterday. What's up?
Yeah, yesterday was one of those crazy sports days. I mean, you'd want to talk about content galore. Well, we were blessed by the content gods yesterday with many, many storylines to cover today. You talk about the CFL, the NFL, the NHL. I mean, you name it. There is a lot of great stuff for us to get into. And, you know, I mean, I guess I'd have to say, you know, Monday morning feels like a lot of, you know, the same for me, because it's adrenaline through the roof. It's emotions. It's yelling at the TV. It's suffering, you know, fantasy losses and you name it.
You've gotten used to that by this point.
Digesting two Leaf games.
Fantasy losses.
Yeah, it's been a tough year fantasy, but no sleep, man. It's been last night was a tough one. For some reason, I mean, I didn't really have much invested in the NFL game, but a lot transpired, you know, post Leaf game, which
did it ever.
Has a lot of us, you know, debating what some of the stuff that happened in it. Like, you know, I don't know what the future of Rasmus Sandin is, but clearly that's a storyline in itself with the non-call and the knee-on-knee that had him leave the game, and what's the future hold for him, and the refereeing in that game. It's just it's a tough one. It's a tough look on the referees, and I mean, I'm officially out of my survivor pool, so
You talk about the Leafs game, and if you missed what happened last night, I'm sure a lot of people turned that game off. I mean, it was over. It was 5-1. It was a schedule loss is what I would term it for the Leafs. Coming back, playing Minnesota on Saturday night, then going to Winnipeg on Sunday night. A good team. They were jacked up for Blake Wheeler's 1,000th game. Joseph Woll was playing. A perfect confluence of events for Winnipeg to beat the Leafs. But I would argue that, you know, the result was almost secondary to what ultimately transpired in the third period. If you miss what happened, so Winnipeg's up 5-1. The Leafs are able to score two quick goals. Auston Matthews scores in the power play. Andre Kasha scores, kind of grimy little
shortly
goal,
after.
Tucking it under. Yeah, shortly after. So it's 5-3. And in the third period, Pierre-Luc Dubois and Auston Matthews get kind of tangled up. And like, if you and we'll retweet it on the First Up 1050 Twitter account, but if you see that little interaction, you're like, okay, obviously Dubois gets a penalty. Maybe he gets double minor for what transpires there. But they were actually coincidental penalties. Both players were penalized, and that was an absurd call. It made no sense. I think everyone would agree. Like, I'm sure Dubois was looking around like, really? Okay. I don't understand how that's possible. So both of those guys get 2 minutes. And then, shortly thereafter, there's a play where Rasmus Sandin is skating through.
It goes 4-on-4 instead of 5-on-4 Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm. And then Neil Pionk, a knee-on-knee on Sandin. And pretty blatant knee-on-knee. I don't really understand how the refs missed that one either. No call. So the Leafs are irate, and understandably so. I mean, that's back-to-back plays that make literally no sense from a refereeing perspective. I don't want to harp on the referees.
In a 5-3
game. This game was not over by any stretch. Uh-huh. I mean, the Leafs were coming back. They were showing a lot of resiliency, man, because I'm telling you, Leafs teams in years past packed that in. Yeah. And there was, I mean, we were texting yesterday. I thought Joseph Woll might give up a 10 spot last night because his team was so bad in the second period. There were, like, I don't know how many odd man opportunities there were for Winnipeg, but it was close to 7, 8, 9. It was insane. In any case, so this continues on. Listen, Sheldon Keefe is screaming. Everyone on the Leafs bench is screaming. Jason Spezza throws a UFC-style flying knee at Pionk. That was not a good look on Jason Spezza, yeah. I would argue. That was a tough one. I'm almost like trying to forget. I'm trying to process exactly what happened next. And then was that when Kyle Clifford fought?
No, so Spezza throws the flying knee. And yeah. Look, I mean,
There's a lot of action in this third period.
You could tell Spezza was going to make an impactful play, but I don't think, I mean, the way Pionk was diving at the puck, you know, it's a bad play. It ends up turning out to be a bad play, but I don't think the intent from Spezza was to go out and take Pionk's head off. But regardless, it turns into a scrum. The Leafs actually take another penalty. They put Winnipeg on the power play. Winnipeg goes and seals the deal, making it 6-3 with a beautiful Scheifele goal. And then all hell breaks loose. Simmons wires cross. Clifford wires cross. It's, it's a penalty fest. It's a fight fest. And the thing about the fight fest that I don't understand, the referees clearly let this game get out of hand. Okay? And instead of the referees actually taking control of the game and calling penalties and actually policing it themselves, they don't allow the players to police it themselves, too, because clearly there was an upset group of Maple Leafs that wanted retribution. You know, Pionk takes a run at one of their young star defensemen. He leaves the game. He stays on the ice. No penalty called. Dubois takes an aggressive approach at Austin Matthews, who's their best player. No penalty called. And now, you know, instead of the referees being able to, you know, take control of the game and allow the calls on the ice to be made, the players decide to take over. But then exactly. The referees don't allow the players to take over because the guys that wanted to get into the scraps, the linesmen jump in and stop everything.
Well, I mean, the fact that there was no call on the knee-on-knee, Pionk on Sandin, that's what really catapulted this whole thing to what it was. And that was just
it started with Matthews. Yeah.
But John Tavares, I don't know if we have the clip, Chrissy, of John Tavares talking about the knee-on-knee. Okay, I don't think Chrissy's with us right now. But in any case, Tavares intimated that it was exactly that point that kind of set this whole thing off. And I think he's absolutely right. Okay, let's hear from Tavares on the knee-on-knee and what ensued after that. All right, tough.
Maybe. Obviously, we didn't like the hit on Sandy very much. So, you know, anytime you see when your teammates go down like that and have to get carried off, we're going to stick up for one another, we're just going to compete and play. So, when they got the one to go up three again, makes it really difficult, and we just weren't able to generate enough to get the opportunities to really get back in the game.
Here's the one thing I have a hard time processing as a former player and even just as a student of the game, which is what a lot of fans end up becoming. How do four referees, and I'm talking about Brad Meyer, Reed Anderson, Travis Toomey, and Ben O'Quinn, who were the referees that had control of that game. How do four referees miss a blatant knee-on-knee play? And look, people on Twitter, they'll be their own trolls, and they'll say, oh, here's Leaf fans again complaining because one of their play. This has nothing to do about being a Leaf fan, okay? There are incidents like this that happen every night where you have blatant plays that are right in front of you that can't be missed because the puck is right there. Like, Sandin is the guy who shoots the puck. So all four referees have to be watching the guy shooting the puck. How does not one guy see there and step up and say, hey, we got to call that. That's a knee on knee.
I have no idea. I have no clue how that possibly happens. But the same thing also applies to Dubois and Matthews, and I understand nobody was injured in that. But those were two plays back-to-back that were so blatant. It was so obvious. We'll get back to it. And the reaction, by the way, to – and there was a camera in the Winnipeg Jets locker room I mean, you would think those guys won the Stanley Cup last night. Kind of an embarrassing reaction from Scheifele and Logan Stanley doing the Johnny Drama victory after the game. I mean,
I thought that was pretty funny.
I mean, me too. I love Entourage. Shout out to Logan Stanley. I do really respect that. I'm trying some fake anger here. You understand how it is, Carlo.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're trying to rile it up this morning on First Up. But a wild game in Winnipeg last night for the Leafs. I mean, just a crazy one. I think they did show a lot of resiliency. I was really impressed ultimately. Yeah, the result, 6-3, but Leafs teams of old, Leafs teams of yesteryear, do not react the way that this team did last night. I think that's a very positive thing for this team going forward. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to be to really respect their response to the egregious refereeing last night that ultimately was the catalyst for everything that ensued. We'll have to talk about my experience at the Toronto Argonauts game yesterday. Yes, the Argos lost to Hamilton in the East Final, but man, was I in a bad spot as far as my seats go, surrounded by many, many Ticats fans. I'll tell you the story next on First Up. Inexplicably.
I wouldn't say in professional football, in professional sports.
Yeah, so What happened is that the Toronto Raptors played a game on Thursday. And
against the Bucks.
The Milwaukee Bucks. And the Argos thought it would be a good idea to send their starting quarterback to the game to promote the game on Sunday, whether it be for TV ratings, whether it be for ticket sales, whatever. What the Argos didn't realize was that by doing so, it would violate CFL COVID protocols. You're not allowed to go to large gatherings like a sporting event. And if you do, you have to quarantine for 4 days. Argos didn't know that. So by the letter of the law, McLeod Bethel-Thompson was going to have to sit on Sunday. But, you know, the CFL bended their rules and McLeod Bethel-Thompson was able to play. Say what you will, whatever. You can make an argument either way if they made the right decision or the wrong decision. Ultimately, the Argos lost anyways, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But pure fiasco. So I go down there yesterday, and I'm with a couple of my buddies. I'm wearing my Argos, too. Listen, do I want the Argos to win? Sure. But, like, you know, I'm not, like, the most hardcore do or die of the Argos. Like, you know, I'm not going to sleep tonight. Like, that's not how I operate. Realistically, I'll be perfectly honest, I bet on Hamilton. So, and I bet a lot of money on Hamilton. So it was a hell of a result for me.
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe these booze hound Hamiltonians who were behind us, absolutely blackout drunk at 12:15 in the afternoon. So I'm wearing my Argos toque. This guy behind me grabs my shoulder. He's like, "Take off the toque, man. Take off the toque." And I'm like, "Dude, relax. It's like -4 degrees. Like,
yeah.
Like, and like all my friends, like, are we gonna have to fight these losers from Hamilton right now?
Yeah.
Fortunately, some security guards saw this and came over and was like, "If you do that again, you are out." So that's how my day started at 12:15.
Uh-huh.
We moved to another section, and there were Hamiltonians who were even drunker than the first guys. Like, I don't know what was going on. And listen, I'm not trying to put everyone from Hamilton in one bubble. We love Mark Rowe. We love Scott Hart, you know, two of our colleagues at TSN. But those particular Hamiltonians who came from Steeltown to Toronto were getting in one. Listen, I respect it. It's probably because I'm not accustomed to true football passion in our cities. I go to a lot of Argos games. I've never seen anything like that. It was a very hostile environment. And it was a game that the Argos were leading 12-0 at the half and ultimately lose decisively. I mean, Hamilton scored 27 points in the second half to win and to advance to the Grey Cup. Congratulations to Hamilton. But perhaps the real story that is going to emerge from that game yesterday was what happened afterwards. And there are videos circulating online right now of the Argos. And listen, reportedly, allegedly, a Hamilton fan spat on a Toronto Argonauts player. That may or may not be true. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But what is true is that a group of Toronto Argonauts came up from the field, went onto the concourse, and confronted this fan.
Yeah.
And in the midst of this confrontation, one of the players, I forget which player it was now. I'm sure this player is in some serious hot water, or maybe not. I don't know if anyone even cares in the CFL, to be honest.
Yeah.
Starts swinging at a Ticats fan, and he's wearing his helmet, like he's still in his full game day garb. He's swinging, they're fighting, grabbing each other, and it was pure pandemonium after the game. And you can't condone spitting on someone. Of course, that is a disgusting act, and you should have the crap kicked out of you if you do that. Mm-hmm. But probably not by professional football players coming off the field wearing your helmet still. What a pure disaster for the Argos. Honestly, man, and listen, the security was a joke, obviously. That's a big part of this, too. But after everything that happened on Friday, and then your players are going full Meta World Peace, Malice in the Palace. Like, what a joke.
Yeah.
What the hell are those guys doing?
I saw that video surface, and I was like, oh, boy, this can't be good. Oh, and apparently, you know, there was news that broke last night that the police are investigating, and they're about to make an arrest. I don't know if that's, you know, player related, if that's fan related, but regardless, it was a pretty disturbing scene that was videoed after the game between the Argo players and the fans who were probably really intoxicated in the stands.
So intoxicated.
Let's go back to Friday, okay? I think the Argos players, and I believe Pinball was on Overdrive Friday and addressed it and basically said that he owned it. It was his idea, his responsibility. It was his fault for whatever happened.
Falling on the sword.
But what is the one thing the Argos wanted to promote or what wanted to engage in?
Buzz.
Create.
They generated it.
Create buzz. You know, get the attention of Toronto, of sports fans for Sunday's game. Promote it. Well, clearly, the news of whatever happened with McLeod Bethel-Thompson generated the appropriate buzz around it because people were tuned into that game. I mean, I believe the attendance at that game yesterday was close to 22,000, one of the largest crowds ever to attend an Argo game. And let's be frank, I mean, they played Hamilton and
exactly
it was a lot.
It was 50-50. It was a 50-50
East,
split.
Yeah, it was the East final, and you have to imagine that there was a ton of Hamilton Ticat fans. And why this story is so unique is because it was a Ticats player that ratted out McLeod Bethel-Thompson. It was a tweet by Speedy Banks that basically said, yo, like, why do Argos players get to go to Raptor games? I haven't been able to go to Raptor games all year. Where's the CFL in this? And I think the CFL did the right thing because those rules that were put in place at the beginning of the season when we were in a different place in our world, in our city, in our society, when it came to COVID protocols. What the CFL failed to do was evolve with their protocols as the city has evolved with the protocols. Because the messaging that they stood by in their CBA, whatever it is, their rule book, was sort of contradicting the messaging that they were trying to promote with their fans. They're saying, hey, fans, come to a CFL game because it's safe. Come watch our players. But it's not safe for players to go and watch games? How does that make sense in all this?
No doubt.
I think the CFL accomplished what they wanted to do. When you talk about promoting the game and creating a buzz around it, because it did. But ultimately, I mean, you can blame the Argos, but the CFL has to take the blame on this too.
No, I don't think so. Listen, the rules are antiquated. No doubt. There's still rules. Listen, here's the reality, man. There's a lot of places in the world where smoking weed, you go to jail. How stupid is that? But it's still a rule that you have to know about. And if you don't know about it, then you're going to jail. It's dumb, but it's still a rule. And at the same time, the Toronto Argonauts' gross negligence in not knowing the rules of their own league. So I don't see how you blame the CFL. Listen, the rule's dumb, but it's still a rule.
Yeah.
So
it's the Argos' fault.
It's a very dumb rule. And you want to talk about getting caught. Like, you can blame Brandon Banks, but the Argos had McLeod Bethel-Thompson on TSN. It's just an unbelievable story. And honestly, it sucks that they lost, but if they had actually had their quarterback suspended and then they lost.
Well, he basically played like a suspended player.
Yeah, he was terrible.
He was a guy that looked like he was still in quarantine. Who?
You see his behavior after the game, like pushing away the cameras, and then he refused to speak to the media after the game, too. I mean, just
very classless.
An awful, awful weekend for the Argos, really. And this is a franchise. I know a lot of people in the organization. We've gotten to know some of the players. Enoch Mwamba, a close friend of ours, Carlo, but man, a pure disaster all around. PR nightmare. Their players are fighting fans, and they lose the game. Oh, just disastrous.
And look, I know there's a lot of Argo fans that are you know, really pissed off this morning because you know they lost the game, a chance to go to the Grey Cup, a chance to solidify a perfect season at home. But I think ultimately, at the end of this, when you look at the game, when the Argos don't score any touchdowns in the red zone near the goal line, you kind of knew this was setting up for them to lose because Hamilton used the smallest momentum that they had in the second half and used it to rally. And when you're talking about like promoting the game and, you know, a win for the CFL, this, I mean, hearts go out to the Argos fans, but let's be honest. You look at the results yesterday, and clearly the CFL won because the game is hosted in Hamilton. They have the host team playing in it. Again, they're going to be playing the best team in the CFL. So you talk about ultimately coming out as winners. The CFL came out as winners yesterday because they're going to have an unbelievable Grey Cup matchup.
And it's a rematch of 2019, game in which everyone, a lot of people, myself included, I was heavy on Hamilton in 2019. And they were blown out by Winnipeg, who like somehow was able to win their game yesterday. Winnipeg had 6 turnovers and won. How often has that happened in professional football in the last 20 years?
Well, it happened last Monday night. Cleveland
and Baltimore have 6 turnovers that game?
And they had 5.
Okay, I guess the turnover differential was just 4. But I would imagine that if you turn the ball, if there's a turnover differential of 4, you don't win the game very frequently. So a wild weekend in the Canadian Football League. Dave Naylor will join us at 9:30, assuming he wakes up. So it's a 50-50 proposition for the Nail Gun. But I'm sure he'll be with us. We booked him as late as possible because the Nail Gun does not have the best track record of answering, in spite of being the former host of this time slot. He's adjusted to his post-radio ways.
By the way, I was watching a lot of the pregame of the Argos, and you saw James Duthie promoting the Winnipeg game, which
Duthie's
he was at.
So good.
You saw Dave and Shinetti promoting the Argo game. Did you see the TSN swag those guys were wearing? The winter jackets.
So yes, and
are you getting one?
Well, here's the thing about that. I've gone to this will be my 7th Grey Cup coming up on Sunday. I have never gotten a jacket. Apparently, they produce jackets every year, and I have never gotten one. So I am going to work on that today. And Coco, don't you worry. You will be CC'd on the same email.
Thank you, buddy.
Those jackets.
I would
Naylor
love.
I bet you Duthie. And who do we have on the show today? We have Drags. We have Mark Dominic. So we don't really have any of the guys who have worked on the CFL. I guess Naylor would be able to answer the question. I bet you Duthie's got 10 of those jackets.
Yeah,
sitting
every
in his
year
cupboard
he gets
in
one.
Aurora. Yeah, every year. It's a brand new, beautiful Novus jacket. And,
those were sweet, man. I'm watching them. I was like, man, that's some nice TSN jacket, man.
Yeah,
I want to get me one of those.
Poor Duthie, though, has to go to Winnipeg in -25-degree weather. I know it's cool. It's a cool experience. I mean, a really great football game, but, man, he must have been freezing his nuts off that second half. Very unpleasant for our man, JD.
I'm wondering if he did the same thing that Sarah Oleski did, because Sarah Oleski was covering the Bombers game, and then she quickly went over to the Winnipeg Jets game. And she was actually part of the broadcast. I know Duthie wasn't part of the TSN broadcast because Lindsay Hamilton filled in for him again. But I would imagine James Duthie went to the Jets game and saw
that
debacle of the game that it was, firsthand. Did he not?
I don't think he did. I can tell you who did do the doubleheader was our man Jesse Pollock from Bar Down, who will join us at 9:10. We haven't talked to Jesse in forever. I am so excited to catch up with him.
What a squid that guy is.
He is going to be fired up about what happened last night with Winnipeg and Toronto. I did get a text from James.
Is there a guy that loves his sports team more than Jesse Pollock?
He's the mayor of Winnipeg. Sorry, Brian Bowman. You're out. Jesse Pollock is in. I got a text from Duthie yesterday, 9:39. What are the odds of Matthews winning the Rocket right now? I like it. The answer was +700. JD and I went in on the bet together.
Ooh.
So that is going to be a common thread. Matthews now 5 goals back of Draisaitl and Ovechkin for the Rocket in spite of missing a bunch of time early on. It's really struggling early on. This guy has been on a hot streak.
Goals in six straight games.
Eight in six games for Matthews?
Eight in six games. Apparently the wrist is A-OK right
now. No kidding. And if it's not, I mean, someone injured my wrist like that because that guy cannot be stopped. We'll tell you the story from Sunday Night Football. The Kansas City Chiefs keep on rolling, and their defense, man, has it turned a corner. First Up continues here on TSN 1050. Sunday Night Football last night, Carlo, between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Denver Broncos. It was a really boring game, let's be honest.
Snooze fest.
Kansas City was not the offensive powerhouse that, like, I don't even know if we've come to expect it anymore. I mean, I think they are just what they are. I think they're a good team that is now on fire. I mean, they've won five straight games following their 3-4 start. And you know they've had a five-game win streak in all nine seasons under Andy Reid.
Wow.
Kansas City, like, that's a very impressive stat there. And Mahomes has dominated the Broncos. We shouldn't be surprised at that either. He's now 8-0. Andy Reid is 20-3 off of a bye in his NFL career. So the Chiefs were ready to go. And their defense, man, like, if you look at these five games since that 3-4 start, it has just changed remarkably. They made a couple of moves. They brought in Melvin Ingram. They moved Chris Jones to a different position. And everything has changed with Kansas City, and now 8-4, leading the AFC West. I think you have to consider Kansas City a legit contender in the AFC for sure. It's just such a different team than what we've experienced in the past. It's a market change, and I don't really know how to evaluate them anymore because they're not the powerhouse juggernaut that we've seen in years past.
And they're not, but they're clearly the team of the past that knows how to win football games. And in the NFL, I mean, you look at week to week, that's really all that matters. Because week to week, if you think you know what you know about the NFL, you get proved wrong about what you think you know in the NFL. And I think the Kansas City Chiefs fit that bill exactly. I mean, just look at the point spreads this week. We're in week 13, and you had four games that had double-digit point spreads. And the Kansas City Chiefs are one of those teams, but ended up, before game time, coming down to like 8.5. And all the big point spreads covered. Like, that's unheard of in week 13. And, you know, when you're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, everybody knows them from being this high-powered, you know, sling, you know, back and forth, you know, a track meet type of team that will put up a ton of points. Well, that's not how they've been winning football games in their last five games. They've been winning because of their defense, which is so shocking to even sit here and say the Kansas City Chiefs have been winning games because of their defense, because for the first eight games, they were putting up record numbers for being the worst defenses ever assembled. Well, something's clicked. Their defense has found a way to, you know, keep them in games, win them football games. And what has also clicked or not clicked has been their offense. Teams have figured out how to defend their offense, but they're finding ways to win football games.
And I want to give a quick shout out to my boy, Javonte Williams, for his meaningless touchdown with 5 minutes left to cash a five-leg parlay. And
get
I was sweating
here.
That one out. I'm like, all right, this is done. Javonte's not going to score. He was awesome. Like, statistically, like, for fantasy owners, Javonte Williams had 102 yards rushing and six catches for 76 yards and a TD. Get the hell out of here, Melvin Gordon. You're no longer relevant. It is the Javonte Williams show in Denver, and thank you very much to him and to the Denver offense for picking up that TD for me, because that was huge.
Well, congratulations to you, because
thank
I wouldn't
you.
Expect anything different from you. But, I mean, you just look around the rest of the score sheet. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they are clicking on all cylinders right now. Like, that's a team I would not want to be playing in my next week's matchup, because Tom Brady is playing at another level. Leonard Fournette, I mean, this guy has established himself as one of the best producing running backs in the league over the last 4 weeks. I mean, you know, he's been a touchdown machine. Brady with four TDs again yesterday. They win convincingly in Atlanta. The Arizona Cardinals, like, this team does not get any respect from anybody in the league. Kyler Murray and Hopkins returns. They go into the Chicago and just steamroll them. The Cardinals are 7-0 on the road with a league best 10-2 record. And I think the game of the slot yesterday was the Chargers and the Bengals. Justin Herbert just walking into Cincinnati, steamrolling them. They put up a game high 63 points between two squads. That was an exciting game back and forth, which got away from the Bengals late in the fourth. And hey, shout out to the city of Detroit.
That's where I was going.
Getting their first win of the season, and they do it in such Minnesota Vikings fashion in the way that they did it on the last play of the game.
We will play you the final call from that game, and if you miss what happened between Detroit and Minnesota, you're going to want to stick around for that, because a wild finish there. Congratulations to the Lions and their 16 fans who remain loyal to that organization after years of ineptitude. Tough situation for them, but they are on the board with a W. The Morning Scroll is coming up. We'll play you that audio from Minnesota and Detroit, and the celebrations went deep into the night for the Lions. First Up continues here on TSN 1050. It's the Morning Scroll here on First Up. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Koliakova with you. And on our Zoom call this morning, I was shocked to see our man, our producer, Arad Osvandi, in the studio sitting next to 20 Fingers, the Dream Team reunited, yeah. Stockton to Malone. Arad, what's it like to be back in the studio?
It's like Karl Malone, man. It's like getting delivered on Monday morning.
You sound amazing right now.
You sound
now,
so crisp. Keep talking. Keep talking.
Keep going, buddy. Keep
going. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome this morning to the Morning Scroll.
Yeah,
as Mr. Karolnik teased earlier today, we will start the Morning Scroll by playing the Detroit Lions winning for the first time this season. Listen up.
First victory of the year on the line. Goff's got it. Back, looks, throws, and
yes!
Caught! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! They did it! Amon-Ra St. Brown in the receiving end! Oh, they're rushing the field! They've done it! 3 zeros on the clock! This game is over!
They've done it! Man. Can you believe that they've done it? They are now 1-10-1. Unbelievable.
I tell you what. If that performance by the Minnesota Vikings doesn't give or explain coaching for dummies 101.
Oh, God.
Please tell me, okay, you're playing a team that has zero victories on the year, led by Jared Goff, the guy who is known to just have a clutch turnover when it matters the most. 1:54 on the clock, and you're up by 4 points. The only way you lose that game is by a touchdown. If you're Mike Zimmer, why do you think a three-man rush playing prevent defense is going to win you the game?
Well, did you see the coverage on the final play? I mean, that guy was playing another play. I think it was Cameron Dantzler on St. Brown. Horrendous.
They called a timeout to set up their defense, and they basically lined six guys on the last end of the end zone and just let the Detroit Lions come into the front of the end zone and say, hey, throw me the ball.
Yeah, that's
what the hell are they doing? How do you coach that dumb in the NFL? The Lions must have completed six or seven passes to get in the end zone with not one receiver being contested to make the catch. What the hell type of defense was that?
We'll talk to Mark Dominic, our NFL analyst, at 8:45 about that. And there's a lot of good NFL stories, and we haven't even mentioned Bills Patriots tonight. Of course, Arad, you are a Patriots fan. Carlo, I think you like the Bills just a little bit, not enough to go to the game. But in any case, Arad, how are you feeling about your boys this evening?
You mean the first place New England Patriots?
Ah, indeed.
Not after tonight, buddy. Not after
tonight. I am so excited. It's going to be such a fun game tonight, and there's no Leafs, there's no Raps tonight, so the number one focus for everyone will be on Monday Night Football. And I know your allegiances are a little bit split, Carlo, because in our picks pool, where we are on Fuego, we are on the Patriots +3.5. Got the extra point. We got that hook in there. That's a, I think it's a 2.5 point spread now. A lot of money coming in on New England. A true coin flip game. Let's be honest here, right?
Yeah. Well, it is. And look, I mean, there's no way, there's no reason why we can't win both. I mean, the Bills could win by 3 and we could cover the spread 3.5.
That would be,
that would be the absolute best case scenario. But I'm not going to lie to you, man. I want the Bills to absolutely blow out the New England Patriots. Because if there's one thing I've learned about the NFL, week to week, every time you think you know about a team, you get completely blindsided, or you basically get played like a fool, because that team that you think you know a lot about just comes out and plays completely there. Like all the talk this week, oh, Ben's done, Steelers got no chance, they win a big game against Baltimore. What is the other game that caught? Oh, the Detroit Lions are never going to win a game all year. Oh, they win their first game. The San Francisco 49ers could potentially be the best team in football. Seattle stinks. Seattle wins a big game. The Rams, oh, they're done. Yeah, they just steamroll over the Jaguars. I mean, I could go on and on about storylines week after week in the NFL that you think you know what you're talking about, and then you leave the game saying, what the hell did I just watch? And I think the exact same thing is going to happen tonight, because there is too many people right now talking about how great the Patriots are.
Well, this is not a week-to-week thing. They've won 6 in a row. They're playing incredible football. This is not an anomaly.
But they're, every person that you talk to that is a betting person, where are they leaning tonight?
Well, there's only one betting person we referred to on the show.
Okay,
course,
just answer the question. Just answer the question.
Adam Chernoff, he's on the Pats.
Everybody is on the Pats tonight. It's like people forget that the Bills are a really good team in the NFL. And look, don't get me wrong, I'll be the first to admit, they have not played anywhere close to their potential, but I think if there's a game for them to do it, it's tonight, under the lights, Monday night, in front of Bills Mafia, where they actually scare the crap out of Mac Jones, and they create an environment where he poops his pants playing quarterback.
I wouldn't count on that. Arad, do you want to respond to Carlo's assertion there?
Yes, I do want to respond. Look, it's not going to be a blowout either way.
No, I don't think so.
It's not. Like, I was very confident with the Patriots' chances coming in until I saw that Nick Folk has a bit of a knee injury.
Dang.
And Nick Folk's been one of the better players for the Patriots all season, so that does worry me right there. But at the end of the day, the weather is going to be bad. It's going to come down to the running games, and I feel like the Patriots' running game and run-stopping defense will come out superior.
Bang.
Look,
that's good analysis. I totally agree.
There's no question. There's two games that the Bills have struggled mightily this year against two run-heavy offenses. The Tennessee Titans, they couldn't stop Derrick Henry. The Indianapolis Colts couldn't stop Jonathan Taylor. It's clear and evident that the Patriots' success over their last six games has been because of their dominant run game. That is one thing 100% that could play a factor in this game in a negative way for the Bills. But you got, if they're the Bills, you got to know that. You got to know that the only way the Patriots will beat you is if you don't stop the run. And I don't think there's a better opportunity right now for Bills and the Bills Mafia to stand tall and come out being the best team in the AFC tonight under the lights in Bills Mafia Stadium.
All right.
That's wow. Right. I just called it Bills Mafia
Bills
Stadium.
Bills Mafia
I've
Stadium.
I've got the own naming rights for it.
I think a very fair wager would be if the Patriots do win, Carlo, you have to have a third child and name him or her Ramondre in
it's
honor of
impossible
the
to happen,
Patriots yeah. running back. Ramondre Koliakovo. I think that has a really nice ring to it.
Why Ramondre?
Ramondre Stevenson.
Not? Yeah, but why not Arad?
Yeah, come on. We wouldn't want to give your kid. shout out to
if the Pats win, I've got to name my next kid Arad. If the Bills win, Arad has to name his kid whenever he decides to have one, Carlo.
It's just a decision. It's like you
Can
know
I
what
go
I'm
with
ready.
Carlos.
Carlos,
sure.
Carlos, you're here for soup.
Hey, Carlos.
Yeah, all right. Arad, thank you very much. You'll be back with Fact or Fiction at 7:20 and for winners of the weekend at 8:20. Now that you have a functioning mic, you can be part of this show, and I feel very happy about that. That's great news.
What about
news.
The fingers party that's going on in the studio over there?
I can't even imagine how much trash those guys are talking about you and I during commercial breaks. Like, wow, Carol, this guy is such a hack. I miss Landsberg.
This guy's such
Carlo,
an idiot.
Like, why couldn't we have the O-Dog?
There is 100 fingers just all over that board that these guys are operating over there.
Some are sausage, some are 20, but that's we'll have right. to make the determination right. which is which. The Toronto Raptors, a big W over Washington, and a wholesale change in Vancouver with the Canucks. We'll tell you about those stories, about the Leafs and the Jets. A wild, wild evening in Winnipeg. That's all coming up on First Up. All right, let's set up hour two of First Up like this. As an appetizer, we're pretending we're going to a restaurant. We're going to dine at some high-class cuisine in hour two of the show.
What are you ordering as your appetizer?
We're going to order the Vancouver Canucks and the debacle that is that organization as our appetizer.
So maybe, that would be your soup. That would
be
your
our
soup.
Maybe yeah. our salad can be,
the Toronto Maple Leafs.
The Toronto Maple Leafs are the main course.
Main course.
Everything
okay.
that happened All in right. that game against the Winnipeg right. Jets. How about Tiger Woods as our salad? He's back. He's hitting balls. He's looking primed for the PNC
He's
Championship.
He's not ready to play.
Oh, he'll play.
what
he'll
he
play.
Said.
He will be back. I think maybe a little couple drinks as the Toronto Argonauts and okay. everything that happened over that organization for the weekend.
So the soup is the Vancouver Canucks. The salad is Tiger Woods. And the appetizer is the Toronto Raptors. And then the main course is the Maple Leafs.
And the dessert is
the NFL.
The NFL. Wow, that is quite a menu. That is a Michelin star menu coming up in hour two of First Stop. On the way next here on TSN 1050.